where's Royce today? He's at Petersburg, right? Mm-hmm. He'll have a good time. I have been at Carlson Street for 23 years this September, so my time's running out. It's been a long time. Between me and Billy Harper, we have been there 55 years. So they're used to longevity there at Carlson Street. Well, Russ said I could speak on whatever I wanted to, so I chose a two-part lesson on why we believe as we do as Christians, why I'm not an atheist, and we'll have it on the screen over there. Don't have a handout for you, but if you like one, I can get this printed for you. It's in the form of a PowerPoint. It has three parts to it with blanks. Should have copied that. I didn't have any medical plans. So if you like one, I'll be able to get you one. Let's read a couple of passages first. How about Romans chapter 1 to begin with? Beginning in verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has told it unto them. For the invisible things of him of the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood of the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, and neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became foolish. And they changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image they like corruptible man, the beast, of the birds, rather, four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Well, that's part of the text of Romans 1, of Paul's description of the Gentile world in their rejection of God. And he says that the invisible things of God were clearly seen and are clearly seen from the creation of the world. So from the very beginning and from what we see about us, God's existence, his reality is clearly evident to all. But he said the Gentiles rejected him. And in doing so, they were professing themselves to be wise, but they became fools in the process. I want to make this statement about belief in God. I do not believe that it is something mysterious or that it is something complicated or difficult. The reasons people deny God are also self-evident, and you can easily see through why they do reject God. But it's not because there's some problem with accepting God. But atheists want to make it as if it's impossible for us to believe in God. Any rational person just would not do that. But that's the furthest thing from the truth. I believe it is not mysterious, it is not difficult, and it is also self-evident. It's self-evident from our daily lives and from the created world around us. By the way, several months ago now, on Sunday night, I presented a series of lessons on I Am a Pharisee. And I have used different characters all the way through. I used one, I am a feminist, and also used one, I am an atheist. So I really got tired of being those kind of people with those folks. And I wanted to stop and come back. Let's let some folks come on in. I believe I know this fellow.
How you doing? Good morning. Good morning. How you doing, Mark?
Good, fine. Thank you.
Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you. I was waiting on you.
Oh, that's so good to see you. Looking well, man. Oh, you're down in the light over there. How are you doing now?
Well, we're discussing why I'm not an atheist.
Oh,
and I was telling the class that several months ago that I presented that and acted as if I was throughout the whole lesson. I'm an atheist and gave reasons why. Well, there aren't very many good reasons. I want to show you, though, some other presentations that people have made that are opposite in nature. Let me tell you a little bit about each one of these. The first one is by Bertrand Russell. This was in 1927 in England. And he gave a presentation on why I'm not a Christian. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why he did that was that the atheist community in Europe, in the England where he lived, began to question whether or not he was as strong as he once was against Christians, against Christianity. They thought he was getting softer. And so at this secular society convention, this meeting they had, this was the time in which he presented this lesson on a Christian. And he really came down strong. And the reason was just as I explained, pressure was on him to do that. They wanted him to make some very bold statements against Christianity. So he gave his reasons. There's also been a number of people who have presented these kind of lessons on why I'm not an atheist. One of them that I really enjoyed recently was by a man who's a live man, Robbie Zacharias. And I gave a date on there, 1991, but he's been doing that now for many years over the last, from the first time he presented that. And I believe that that is unanswerable, that last one. By Robbie Zacharias. Other people have also given presentations on why they were not an atheist, why they were Christian. Let me give you, here's a list of those that I took out of a presentation, and I have a copy of it. Bertrand Russell, well-known agnostic atheist in England. And here are some of the reasons that he gave for not being a Christian. I believe it is very revealing to study their reasons as well, because in doing so, you see whether or not it has power, has virtue, or has merit or not. But one of the first that they will give is that the universe is under design. I'm going to explain what they mean by that. That is a counter-argument to what we say when we say the world is wonderfully designed. It's designed for the optimum purpose of human life on Earth. And here's how they will counter that. They will say, well, you know, you humans have difficulty with wisdom teeth. Why do you have to have all those taken out? Why are they giving you such problems? If God designed it such a perfect and wonderful world, why do you have to do that? Why do you have to have your fingers removed? Why do you have these problems with various parts of your body? Things that seemingly don't need it. Why? Why is there not enough room for our wisdom teeth? And they will also use arguments like the deserts and their vast and multiplied thousands of acres of areas of land mass where you can't use it. You can't raise cattle there, you can't raise crops there, you can't live there because it's so blistering hot and there's no water. So their argument is, well, it's not very well designed, but they will say strong things against God. They will say, if your God is so knowledgeable, he's all intelligent and all knowing, couldn't he have designed a better world than the one you live in? They will also say, look at the globe, look at the earth you live on. Two-thirds of it, plus, is made of water. Why all of this wasted space? Why all of this water there? And the depth of it, and very, not very any good uses for it. It's just salt water. And only one-third of the earth's area is land, and you can't even live along the other. So you see where they're going with this. And they'll multiply those arguments. They'll just go on and on and on. The earth is under design. Well, I'm not going to give an answer to all of these because of our time. But I want to just let you get a feel for their arguments. But I want to present mine on why I'm not an atheist. But that's one of the ones you'll have to answer. And number two, they say that we have to wait to eternity, to God's judgment for justice. And so we tell them, well, people do wrong. Hitler did. Pol Pot of Cambodia killed millions and millions of people. Joseph Stalin, on and on through history. The murderers, the mass murderers. And, you know, Hitler went out and shot his wife and then shot himself in order to escape justice. Well, they say, Christians have to say, well, we got to wait. We got to wait for eternity for justice. Why don't we have it now? Why don't we live in a just society now? And so that's one of the arguments that they make. And number three, Bertrand Russell said concerning Jesus Christ. Now, it's amazing how they will make arguments against God and say ugly things against God and against Jesus Christ. But that he said Jesus Christ was not the best and the brightest person he ever lived. And it really gets under the skin of a Christian, it doesn't even when I read those statements, and they make derogatory statements about Jesus Christ. Because I believe he is the one. And he is the most noble. He is the wisest who has ever lived. He is the purest who lived without sin. But they will accuse him of living in sin, of having committed sin. And so, he said in this presentation in 1927, that he believed that Buddha and Socrates both were better than Jesus Christ. Wow. Either he doesn't know Jesus or he doesn't know Buddha or Socrates. And for them to say people like Mohammed, the founder of Islam, that he's a better person than Jesus Christ. Now those are statements that cannot be sustained. They're not true. But those are the kind of arguments he made throughout this presentation. And then his last point was that fear is the foundation of all religion and truth, Christianity. I don't believe that. What does the New Testament say about fear? Perfect love cast out fear, because fear has torment. Now there is an awe and reverence of fear of God. It ought to be there. But it's not this trembling kind of fear that you cower before God who loves you. That's not it. It is more a deep respect and reverence for God. But they say that fear is the foundation of all religion. By the way, one of you remember Robert Owen, who came to the United States in the 1800s to establish socialism, a socialist society. And they bought thousands of acres, I think it was in Indiana, New Harmony, Indiana. And it ended up, there was conflict and a debate scheduled between Alexander Campbell and Robert Owen. Well, Brother Campbell invited Robert Owen to his farm. And at the time it was Virginia, now West Virginia, Wheeler, West Virginia. And he came to his farm and they were walking across his farm there. Alexander Campbell was there. Wealthy man, one of the wealthiest men in the state of Virginia. Maybe it was under 1700s. And they were walking across the farm, and he had sheep. He, in fact, was the president of the Sheep Growers Association for wool, Southern wool, and that's where he came as well. But he had cattle, and they were out there grazing grass, and some of them chewing cud under the tree, shade tree in the summertime. And Robert Owen, the atheist, looked at that cow over there and he said, you know, Mr. Campbell, I'm like that old cow under the tree. He said, that cow is going to die. Somebody's going to kill it after I'll eat it. But the cow doesn't know it, doesn't fear it. Doesn't fear dying at all. Doesn't know very much about it. And he said, I'm like that cow. I don't fear that. I don't fear that. Campbell's response was, you're right, the cow doesn't fear dying, probably, doesn't give an expression about it, but that's not the question. The question is, do you have hope in death? Now that's a good one. The question is not whether you fear dying. There are a lot of people that can harden their hearts to the point that they don't fear anything. They don't fear God, they don't fear judgment, and they don't fear dying. You can reach that point where you just harden your mind and steady yourself against it, where it doesn't bother you anymore. But that's not the question. The question is, when you die, do you die in hope? This is what Paul wrote to Titus, Titus 1, verse 2. He says, in hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, promised before the foundation of the world. So there's that expression about dying in hope. I added this one. This one was not in his presentation of why I am a Christian. But it was in another section about death. Come on in. Good morning. I added this number five to this list, and that is that they say that there is no proof that man can survive death. Because we believe that when you die, your spirit, your soul, returns to God who gave it. Well, they say there's no scientific evidence of that. You can observe it. Scientists can look at you. Doctors can observe you when you die. And there's no evidence that anything is going anywhere. When you die, you're just dead. And so they said that Christians have to give a long, sustained argument here to prove that a man survives death. Let me show you how to answer that. We do not have to prove that an invisible spirit of man leaves the body and ascends to God. It does. We don't have to prove that. Here's what we have to prove. That there is a resurrection of the dead. And that the spirit of man lives again in the body that they once lived. Now that's what we have to prove. Do we have proof of the resurrection of the dead? Yes. Do we have eyewitnesses? That here was a person who lived and he died, and now he rose again. Yes, we do. And the greatest of all is the death of Jesus Christ and the witnesses who saw him after he arose from the dead. Well, those are the kind of arguments that they're made, that they make on why I am not a Christian. Well, this presentation by Robbie Zacharias, and we'll go through each of his points just simply to name them for you. He said, if there is no God, then there is no moral law. That's true. You can't prove that there's a moral law if there's no God. Number two, if there's no God, there's no hope. That's obviously so. Like the old cow that dies. Cow doesn't have any hope. And if man doesn't have God, if there is no God, there is no hope. Number three, if there's no God, there's no meaning for life. That's true. You lose meaning. Here's what an atheist says. He says there's meaning in individual things you do in life, like your job, or your mother, you're raising children. So you're doing something that you like to do, you enjoy doing, and therefore there is individual meaning in life, but they said there's no overall meaning to it. So when it's over, and there's no real big meaning or overarching meaning for it. Well, that's a pretty sad record, isn't it? That you can only have meaning for one day, but you can't have meaning for the whole of your life. Christianity says otherwise. And then number four, if there is no God, there is no recovery once death is occurred. That is, if you're wrong about this, when you die, there's no backing up and say, wait a minute, let me do a rerun of this. I want to see if I can go back and retract and rethink this. No, once death has occurred, there is no recovery. I presented this at Constance Street with his voice presenting. It was on a CD, and I did a platform so that you could see him as he's presenting it, but it wasn't live, it wasn't a DVD, unfortunately. It was just a CD. But I believe that's one of the most powerful presentations I've ever heard on why I am not an atheist. I want to tell you during Bible class period what atheists' big problem is. They have a bunch of them. But I want to tell you what I consider to be one of the biggest problems atheism has, and then we'll conclude with several other reasons for the worship hour on why I'm not an atheist. But here's their big problem. By the way, I've tried this out on people. One was a young man in high school who said that he was not a Christian, was not a atheist, an atheist. And I said, well, do you consider something with me? And he said, yes, we were in a classroom. Ladies Bible class, and we had a board in that chalkboard. And I drew what you're going to see here on the board. And he let me just speak and present this problem. And when he got finished, he said he could not give an answer on that. By the way, this has been done by far more capable men than I in discussions with atheists. And this is an unanswerable argument that's going to be presented to you. What I drew on the board were seven boxes. And There's something in each one of these boxes except number one. And number one, for an atheist, there's nothing. So there's nothing in box one. And what you do is you go all the way through to box seven, and seven is where we are now. That is, live human beings, thinking, intelligent human beings, with our present world. Our present existence is number seven. But with evolution, you don't begin with number seven, do you? Creation, in creation we begin with. With 7 days and 6 days of creation, number seven, everything is complete. So with Christianity, in chapter one, the first chapter of the Bible, we begin in chapter in number seven, box number seven. But atheists don't. They begin all the way back here at number one, which is nothing. Nothing's in that box. So, what you ask is, how do you get out of box number one, where there's nothing? And how do you reach all the way down to box number seven, where there is the world, the present world that we live in? Now, if that's a tall order, evolution can't answer it. Let's talk about it just for a moment. Here's the box. Atheists believe that everything that now exists came to be from nothing. Now, that is not the position in the past. In the past, atheists believed that there was matter. There was inanimate, non-moving, non-intelligent matter in box number one. And now through science and scientific discoveries, they now have almost universally accepted the fact that matter was not there in the beginning. So matter is not eternal. And matter was not there in box number one. So they have admitted that in box number one, there is absolutely nothing. Look at this. Robert Jastrow, if you don't know him, the author of God and the Astronomers, 1978, wrote an old book now. But he said things that really shocked atheists in his day. They did not lie, because he admitted many things. He said, I'm fascinated by the implications of some of the scientific developments of recent years, the essence of which is that the universe had, in some sense, a beginning, that it began at a certain moment in time. So what does he say? Matter has not always existed. And it had a beginning at some point. So box number one has nothing in it. Here's Stephen Hawking. You know him? You've seen him on television? He's unfortunately the equivalent of Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah.
He's had it for what, 40, 50 years? Longest living, I believe, patient of Lou Gehrig's. And he's really a cripple, I thought he was brilliant man. They say he has the highest IQ of any person ever, but he denies God. Mm-hmm. Stephen Hawking, almost everyone that believed that the universe and time itself had the beginning. And he says, the Big Bang, that's where it all started. Many do not like the idea that time has a beginning, probably because it smacks of divine intervention. So all these authors here, they're admitting that there is nothing in box number one. Lawrence Krauss, another atheist and physicist, surely nothing has ever been as physical as something. What? What did he say? Nothing has ever been as physical as something, especially if it is to be defined as the absence of something. And if you understand that, explain it to me. So he's trying to say that nothing is something, right? If it is defined as the absence of something. So what is he hanging on to? Something. He's hanging on to the word something there. But they're all saying something very important here, aren't they? They're all admitting that there's a big problem, and the problem is spelled nothing. All right, let's go back to this, because I want you to see this point. This is really powerful in presenting it to an unbeliever. By the way, when I do this, and when I did it for that young man who said he did not believe in God, he was an atheist, I would not let him out of box number one. I just kept him trapped there. But if you let him out of box number one, they go to box number two. The problem is the box number two only has a rock in it. Something inanimate, not living, not moving, not breathing, not intelligent. So if you let him in box number two, he can't get out of number two because he's got a rock. Or a little piece of dirt. How are you going to get a human being out of a piece of dirt? Or out of a rock with no God to create it? How are you going to do that? But I don't even let them out of box number one. I leave them parked right there. And I let them explain to me, how do you get out of box number one? You can't do it. There's nothing in there. What if they were to say, Brother Walker, what if they were to say there was a big bang? Well, isn't that something? Something has to explode last time I looked.
Yeah.
And you usually have to have a match. If you're going to have an explosion, don't you have a match? Don't you have fire? You have to have something to ignite the bone. And last time I noticed, when things blow up, it doesn't end up being an ice universe.
No.
If a building blows up, then you end up with, you know, a top fire, or the hot. Maybe you end up with just a fire zone. But they want to say the Big Bang started it all. No. If box number one has nothing in it, guess what? Nothing can explode. It can't happen because there's nothing to blow up. What are they talking about blowing up? What kind of fuse do they have? What kind of material do they have to explode? Where did it come from? So that's box number one. And you stay on that as long as you need to. Because I'll let them out of box number one. Box number one, nothing. And you call it the absence of something that they feel to, but it's still nothing. Box number two is inanimate, non-living matter. Could say a rock. Let's just say it's a pin. A pin. That's in box number two. If we sit here long enough, how many years, to watch that pin, will that pin start walking? Will it start breathing? You know, if we had a rock in this room and we were here watching that and that thing started moving, I'm going to leave and move. I'm going to get out of here. A rock is not going to start moving. We're talking about scientific stuff, aren't we? We're talking about just normal, rational thinking here. It's not going to start moving. But matter, if it's just matter, it's not going to start breathing on its own. It's not going to start growing. If it does, we're going to be shocked. You're going to need a God to create living, thinking, intelligent. That's box number two. If you get out of box number two, which you can't, but if you get out of box number two and go to box number three, you have animate matter, that is food. But non-intelligent matter. So it can't think. Can't design itself. Can't create itself. I remember one of my teachers, my enormous teacher in school, and during the time where they were talking so much about test tube babies. You remember that?
Yeah.
And the scientists were going to go in the laboratory and they were going to get the eggs from the woman and the sperm from the man, and they were going to put the two together in this test tube, and they were going to put them in the right temperature and maybe shake it a little bit, and they were going to develop a baby out of test tube. So they had the whole world. They were shaking the whole world by that. And our teacher, they're finding Christian man who believes people in God, he's now deceased, but he was actually Bible teacher to stop. He said to our class, if they develop a baby with test tube, do you know what that would be? Because it's both very intelligent. You gotta have the smartest people working on that. And trying to do it. By the way, I never saw a baby develop any test tube. They can't be incubated then. They don't have to be living. It's gonna have to grow and develop so they're gonna have to take out of it. But isn't that a remarkable thing? But if they work to accomplish that, it proves their intelligence had to be used. It also proves you had to have something to begin with. You had to have the egg and you had to have the sperm, you had to put it together and know how that develops. Non-intelligent matter. In box number four, let's suppose it becomes intelligent. matter, but it can't speak. As far as I know, human beings are the ones who really speak a language. Now, I know birds communicate, and even whales and animals. Last time I noticed, a dog was barking. I don't know what they're saying. I guarantee they're not saying much. And a bird may sing, but the vocabulary is going to be pretty limited, isn't it? So here's no language. Suppose you get the box on the floor and you have intelligent grammar. How does language develop? Anyway, how does your child speak English? Why does your child speak English? My son's went to the Greek islands one year. This opportunity for us, and we went there. And I was so amazed because I've studied a little Greek in school, just to learn some words, and I know the vocabulary, I know the alphabet. And these little children were walking around speaking Greek. They shocked me. And here I was laboring and studying and studying. And these little children were walking around speaking Greek. And I thought, well, what about me? The parents of Greeks. Why do you speak the language you do? Because you hear it.
Yeah.
You hear it from there. Why does a little child grow up speaking Spanish, German, Russian? It's not because they were so smart they just picked it up on the right. It's because they're true. Now suppose you have a matter here, and it's intelligent, but it's never spoken, no language. Can it begin speaking a language on its own? There's a language there. It has to hear. It has to be able to recognize the sounds and develop that language. It's not
possible.
Unless you're an apostle, unless you have the gift of tongues here.
Yeah.
But you see where we're going with it. You see how you're going step by step with each one of these boxes. And then box number 5 is intelligent talking matter. So somehow they began to talk, but they haven't explained how, have they? So you really can't move from box number 4 to box number 5. How are you doing? With no one around to speak, no one around to hear. By the way, that brings up an interesting discussion, doesn't it? How did Adam and Eve know how to speak? And then he brings up this interesting discussion. What was the first one? Did it ever conceive it? I bring up this question to Carson Street, and I said, well, you better split that. Melvin especially. I asked one of the preacher, I said, do you know what the first one was? And he said, I don't know what that is. And I said, I do. I said, it was Hebrew. He said, how do you know? I said, how do you know it's not? He said, if you know my language, you are Greek. So how do you know it's not Hebrew? By the way, here's a good argument for Indian. The words with meaning attached to inscription is in Hebrew. And words in a specific language, like English, have meaning in that language. You know all those names that are given in the Old Testament? And God's different names that are given in Hebrew? Abraham, Sarai, Sarah. All of those are based upon the Hebrew words and Hebrew meaning. I think that's a good argument for being Hebrew, but I have never been able to convince some other preachers, so y'all take it for the word. Number 6. Box number 6, something new. All of the ones before it in box 5, 4 through 5, and box number 6, conscience. We all have one of the beliefs. What is conscience? What's that?
It's just those little voices in your head.
Yeah, there's somebody saying, that's wrong with your ear. You should have said that. I wish I had a switch to turn that on. Sometimes. But it is, conscience means to think along with yourself. Science is to know, con is with, to reason, to think along with yourself. And then this little conscience inside you sits in judgment on your behavior. You know something I never noticed? A snake. When it bites you, I never seen a snake say, I'm sorry. I wish I had done that. Does a snake have a conscience?
No.
Not that I can notice. And a dog biting me? I don't think they have a conscience. So they might guilty sometimes. They'll tell you something. Conscience is a big problem for atheists. It's a huge problem. How did it get to that? It would just matter that it's evolved from nothing. How did we develop conscience? Right and wrong. And you know what? Your conscience is the same as mine. Now we can change them. We can harm them. We can harden them. But everybody has a conscience. It's just wrong. No matter what country you go to, mine is still wrong. Yeah. Killing is still good. Everybody sees things exactly alike. The conscience until you change their conscience. Until you're wrong. You see where these boxes are going? Step by step. Step by step, they're adding up. And then you get to box number 7. This is our present for you. This is where we are today. And then they want to criticize this present world. Here's a good reply for those who want to criticize the universe and say, you call it this one. You have to have wisdom teeth in the chiropractor, take them out. You've got all this water that's on the earth, 2/3 of it, put your face in it. They're saying, they believe they could design a better universe. Mm-hmm. You know what? I challenge them. Here's some paper. You start designing it. Tell me what it's like when it's over. Someone says, the water causes people to be dumb. So let's do away with all water. Wait a minute. We've got to drink water. 5. Fire and danger. We've got somebody to go to the fire department. People get burned up in fire. Houses get burned up. So let's do away with fire.
Yeah. Huh? We do away with fire.
We do away with fire. Then how do we cook our food? How do we warm ourselves? You see, you can't, a human being cannot change one thing about the universe. If he does, he's going to fall over the universe. It's like somebody toying with someone who's designed a spacecraft to go into outer space, and a child comes up and says, I'm going to design one for you. Really? Try. One person said that complaining about the universe and thinking you can design one better is like somebody walking up to one of those big spacecrafts down in Florida, Houston, and they're getting ready to shoot that thing off to the moon or to the outer space. And in the moving of it to the launch pad, somebody scratched it. Got all this paint on there, designs, you know. And somebody got a little scratch on the side. And that's an unbeliever coming up to the universe and saying, I don't think this thing's going to fly. Why? Scratch that, don't say. Doesn't have anything to do with it, does it? Just didn't fly. Well, do you think this is a powerful argument? 7 months. How do you get out of boxing to win? By the way, I saw that young man. Some months after our discussion, and I said, did you figure out a way to put on the function? And he said, no, I'm still there. Well, that's exactly where you'll be if you were in that place. You'll be able to watch something like that. You can't. So why am I not an atheist? So if I don't want to be stuck in boxing for one. And by the way, we're not there, are we? We are in box 7. And that's where Christians are. That's where we are today. We began there. We didn't develop there. We started there. God created. He spoke and it was done. He commanded and it was steadfast. the song said. Why are we not ready for this? I like that, so my foot is a conflict, right? Why are you a Christian? Peter said, be ready to give an answer, better than I would ask you. The reason the hope that is in you, reverence. And if you look at the world, so we should be ready to give an answer. Of what we believe and how we believe it. By the way, if you haven't noticed, our country is becoming rapidly an unbelieving nation.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And people are now openly attacking the Bible, attacking what we believe, attacking Christianity. But the belief of atheists, by the way, what is their catch? What is it that they believe more than anything else? If you were to ask them, what is at the heart of what you believe, what are they going to say? That's it. They don't have anything else in the Bible. What they have in their bag, number one, is evolution. But how can you evolve from nothing? When Norman and I left one time ago, we kind of know how our house works, where everything is, how many trees are outside. We don't have the pine tree in our house. We don't have a cedar tree. What if when we go back home in just an hour or so, there's a cedar tree there? One day or another? How did it happen? Could it just appear on its own? Could it just happen? Could it? Our children are grown. You know what it is? What if we go to the house and there's some children in the house? Where did they come from? Things don't just happen, do they?
No.
It can't come out of thin air. It can't just pop into being. And yet that's what they want us to believe. There is no good explanation on their side of why they have rejected Christianity and how they have rejected that. There is no good reason. They can make fun of Christianity all they want to.
That's
a dangerous thing to do. Mm-hmm. And beside that, when you are left, you have nothing but only to be a cast under the tree, a shade tree. And say, I believe Jesus told us fine people off where they are today in their unbelief. Look at this passage, John chapter 3. And the time is about up. John 3, verse 19. This is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light. Why? Because they're evil. For everyone that doeth evil hates the light, neither comes to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in him. I believe that is it. Powerful explanation. Why do people love darkness rather than light? Because they want to study the light. Because they want to do what they do. When do most crimes and most ungodly things occur? During the daylight hours or during the night? Why do they come around their house at night? Because they think they're going to see something they don't see.
Undetected.
And yet God can see through the darkness as well as the light. This is a good explanation, isn't it? This is the condemnation. This is the reason why we're condemned. Because light came into the world. And yet we love darkness rather than light. That's what Jesus is. That's what Jesus is. Well, I'm going to stop there. My time is up. Thank you for being part of the class today. But this was just reason number one on why I'm not making it. Because, well, you can't get past number seven, I'm sure we are. without believing in an intelligent being, a loving being called God, who created all things within verse 6. Thank you.